Hey, M4 Edge listeners, a quick shout out and thank you to Very Annoyed 1224. Very Annoyed 1224 is very annoyed by things other than our podcast, but he or she loves our podcast and told us so in a really nice review on iTunes. So thank you, Very Annoyed. We hope the rest of your life is as pleasant as listening to M4 Edge, and we encourage your fellow listeners to follow your lead and also rate us a review. Next, this episode is smack in the middle of our mini-series on 3D printing, or additive manufacturing. If you haven't already listened to episode 1 of this mini-series, with Ben Redwood of 3D Hubs, you may want to go back and do that first, particularly if you're not familiar with all of the 3D printing technologies and terminology. Ben does a really good job of describing them and listing out some of their differences. Also, if you listen to that episode, you'll get the URL for a couple of free gifts that are made available to M4 Edge listeners by 3D Hubs. So check that out. In addition to Ben Redwood, we interview Greg Mark of Mark Forged, Bob Swartz of Impossible Objects. Today is Nancy Hardwick of Meld Manufacturing. And next up is Blake Teipel of Essentium. As I said, the Ben Redwood one is particularly useful if you're new to 3D printing and additive manufacturing technologies, but of course, he's got some additional insights of his own that are worth listening to. With that, let's start the show.
This is where I think there's huge, huge opportunity going all the way back to the design of products. You know, I think in our future, our mechanical design engineers will be as educated in materials, and they will come together as one body of knowledge and expertise, because we will be able to build with material combinations never before possible. And that's what we're doing today.
Hi, and welcome to the M4 Edge podcast. I am Marco Nunziata. Our journey into the world of 3D printing continues today with Nancy Hardwick, CEO of Meld Manufacturing Corporation. Last year, Meld was voted the most disruptive new technology at the R&D 100 Awards. As we are discovering in this mini-series, the 3D printing universe includes a variety of techniques and processes, each with their own advantages and each best suited for a different use. So what makes Meld unique and what is it best suited for? In our conversation, Nancy argues that Meld offers two key advantages. First, its ability to produce large size parts, very large. Second, the fact that Meld machines can operate out in the field, not just in a controlled environment. They can be brought where they are needed, on oil rigs or military bases, and be used to repair and strengthen existing parts that would be too costly and bulky to ship out. So while Meld offers a 3D printing process for metals, Meld machines are not what you would use to print the nifty, intricate, paperweight-sized metal objects that you often get handed if you visit a 3D printing shop. No, Meld comes into its own with big parts like a 30-foot-long tractor trailer rail. Other 3D printing companies we have interviewed on our show say they can reach large scale thanks to the speed of their machine. When they say scale, they mean the large number of parts they can print in an hour or in a day. When Meld boasts about scale, however, they talk about the actual size of an individual part, though they can't print an entire spaceship yet. We also discuss with Nancy how additive manufacturing, 3D printing that is, will change our lives, and why you should encourage your children to pursue interdisciplinary passions. It's a great conversation, and to us, Nancy's vision of the future was truly inspiring. Enjoy the episode and forward it to friends and colleagues. Post it on social media. Help us spread the word. And if you really like it, write us a review on iTunes and help us build our community of listeners to keep the show going. Thanks for being curious.
Nancy Hardwick of Meld Manufacturing, welcome to M4 Edge.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here with you guys.
Glad to have you. Marco, you want to kick us off?
I do. So after this warm welcome from Michael, Nancy, my first question is, why on earth are you doing this? And what is it exactly that you're doing?
Wow, that's a big question right out of the gate. I'm following my passion. That's the why. I think we have something remarkable here that offers value to the world, and I'm very excited to share it with you. So probably I should explain what MELD is, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So technically, MELD is a metal deposition process. For metals, for metal matrix composites, potentially for other composite materials, but we'll focus on metals for our explanations. I say it's a metal deposition process because we certainly can use the MELD process for additive manufacturing, but it can be used for much more. And additive manufacturing obviously is a very exciting phenomenon happening right now, enabling huge value propositions in a number of ways to a number of industries. We think we have that and more in the MELD process. And that's because it can be used for additive manufacturing and also for any combination of metal joining needs, including coatings or claddings, adding features, or repair. And it's quite unique. You mentioned you're interviewing several companies in the additive space. I think for metals, that space is growing by the day, it seems. I think we're working our way up to 50 different unique technologies and companies working on commercializing them. And metal additive really got its start in powder-based technologies, and that's where you see the highest density of technologies and companies and processes today. As this industry, this additive for metal industry grows, we'll see more differentiation. But what we see today are some concentration areas on powder-based technologies happening primarily in powder beds, and then powder and wire-based technologies that are introduced to some sort of melt beam, whether that's a laser or e-beam. And MELD is unique and different from those in very distinct ways. Which means that we have a very different value proposition to bring to users and industry. And the crux of why we're different comes down to the fact that this is a solid state technology. So if you think of how you manipulate metal, how you move metal around, how you get metal to stick to metal, this comes down to introducing energy into the material. And the ways we're most familiar with that energy involve heat. So most of the technologies for additive today involve either, like I said, a laser, for example, which is doing the melting, or perhaps metal and glue are mixed together and then put in an oven where the melting is happening. There is another way to move metal, to manipulate metal. You can put your energy into the material in the form of work rather than heat. And that's what we're doing. So the MELD process is a thermomechanical process. We stay below the melt temperature, and that's a game changer for what we can do and how we do it. I think that's the best explanation when you're doing apples to apples comparison for additive, and I can talk about why it's different, how it's different, what that means for the other ways in which you could use the same machine and the same process. So tell me where you'd like me to go from there.
Vanessa, yes. As a follow-up, I would be quite interested in going a bit deeper in how your process is different, as you just touched upon, and why. What makes it different, and why does a difference make it better, more effective than other processes, and in what ways?
And let me add on to that before you can jump in.
I don't know if I can remember all that.
it's what makes it special. And you said something earlier about below the melt temperature, and that's one of the technical things I wanted to get more clarification on. So what does that do for you?
Melting metal to move metal about is efficient in a number of ways. But like every process, there are pros and there are cons to the process. And when we melt metal, we introduce opportunities for a loss of quality in general. So you can imagine if you have two steel plates and you welded them together with the arc welding traditional process, basically melted them together and put them under stress, you can imagine instinctively, intuitively, where the failure would be. It would be at the joint, the place where you welded. And if you looked at the material, often you'll see at a macroscopic or microscopic level that the material is inferior. So as a fabrication method, there are challenges in building up basically weldments to create an additively manufactured product. There's an opportunity for atmospheric contaminants to be in your product. There's an opportunity for there to be porosity or voids in between the material that you've added and not added. And there are some inherent limitations. If you could build parts or coat parts or repair parts without melting metal, you will see better performance properties, better mechanical properties, no porosity or voids, and you will have the luxury of some additional flexibility in processing. For example, you will be able to process that material in open atmosphere. So if you walk in a machine shop and you see a part on a mill, a CNC mill, and it's being machined down to a final geometry, that's in the open environment. Today, traditional melt, M-E-L-T, based additive technologies require protection from our atmosphere and protection from the oxygen in our atmosphere. So they must be conducted in either a vacuum or a chamber which has had the oxygen evacuated and filled instead with something like nitrogen or argon. So if I have to control my atmosphere with a melt-based process, MELT, I automatically have some constraints on size. I can only build stuff that will fit in my chamber or my bed. With MELD, M-E-L-D, our machine looks just like that CNC machine. We operate in an open atmosphere. Because we're not melting the metal, we're able to be in a highly scalable environment. So this technology, now you can think about making huge things. I mean, everyone thinks about small and intricate parts today when they think about metal additive, but not for very long, because this is a technology where you can build spacecraft. I mean, huge, huge things. Now there's a trade, right? We're not going to have the features and resolution of a part that's been built one particle of powder at a time. But an advantage with a solid state solution is we can make parts or repair parts or coat parts with any metal. And that's not true for melt-based technologies. There are many new alloys, and today we see more and more as we chase down alloy designs that give us the lightest weight with the best structural performance properties. Increasingly, these are unweldable materials, what we call unweldable materials. So there are alloys, let's say, that the aerospace industry really prefers to use and has invested quite a lot of money to qualify to be able to use. They can't go in a traditional additive manufacturing 3D printer for metal, but they can go in a MELD machine. So the opportunity to print anything, anywhere, at any size is really what I think is the distinction for our process.
So this sounds like a really big deal, Nancy. And impress us some more. I guess you have not 3D printed an entire spaceship yet.
Not yet.
what is the biggest part or product that has been printed so far with the MELD technology?
Well, we're looking at some very big parts for in shipbuilding and in space applications. So for example, a tank, a panel that is joined to make a tank, let's say a fuel tank on a spacecraft, that might be 4 by 5 meters. That's something that we can, we wouldn't recommend that you build it with our technology, but what the value proposition is there is to add rib stiffeners. And so this may be too complicated of an example, but as an example, today, aviation and aerospace will buy, let's say, a 4-inch thick plate of material, and they will machine down to a 1-inch wall thickness with ribs, a grid pattern, let's say, of rib stiffeners on that plate. What this does is gives them the lightest weight panel possible. So you try to get your wall thickness down as much as you can and rely on rib stiffeners rather than just pure plate thickness for structural integrity. 4-inch thick plate might be quite expensive and might have a very long lead time. A 1-inch thick plate might be very inexpensive and very easy to come by, so a very short lead time. So if instead of buying 4 inches of machining down to your final geometry, if we can take a 1-inch plate and build up those rib stiffeners, then not only have we offered the traditional value proposition of additive, which is saving material and saving lead time, but we've also created a part that's just not possible today and saved, availability in some cases. Another very large size part that's similar would be the tractor trailer rail, for example. So there you're talking about maybe 30 feet in length. And if you think about what it would take to put a 30-foot part into an atmospherically controlled chamber and then add features, that's extraordinary and probably immediately cost prohibitive. But that's something that we can do. So really it just depends on what the need is, but there's no limit on the scale.
That's impressive. Eventually I do want a spacecraft.
All right.
For now, this
first
is...
you got to order the machine, Marco, then you can build your own. So you said there are no limits. Is there a lower limit? I remember seeing some video of the MELD machine, and I'm probably describing this incorrectly, and so you can clarify. But it's like a nozzle that shoots out a very viscous sort of goop, right? Whatever the technical term for that goop is. Sludge maybe is another descriptor that you probably don't like, but that's to me what it looks like. But it also means, I think, that you can't get these really small, intricate parts. So there may be no upper limit, but presumably there's a lower limit. You might be able to do the ribs on the wall of the spacecraft, but probably nothing with a fuel nozzle, right? Nothing intricate and small like that. Is that correct?
We have done some nozzle work. You are correct. You are correct in that I do not use goop or sludge normally in describing my process.
I can't imagine why.
and you are right that there is a difference in the resolution size. So I should have said in the beginning, the MELD process is elegant, in my opinion, in its simplicity. And the same machine and the same process work in a variety of conditions. So we can put powdered metal in a MELD machine, and we can put solid bars of metal in a MELD machine. We have the flexibility to use either as a starting material. Nonetheless, this is a high deposition rate process, and we are putting a lot of material through our tool and depositing a lot of material regardless of the form of the material initially.
So when you think about traditional powder-based processes, I think people are used to seeing the powder bed where a binder jet comes across and deposits, you know, glue basically. And then the part is removed from a massive powder and put in an oven to be sintered later. If you think about that, or you think about dropping individual particles of powder in front of, let's say, a laser beam to build a part, then that is your resolution size. And you can imagine then building very complex parts, very intricate parts, parts with very, very fine features. And the goal there is really to get to a net shape part, a part that is its finished size at the completion of the process. That's actually fantastic. You know, there is a role and a need and a value for every process out there. It really comes down to what does the user need? What are the requirements of the product being built? Meld is pretty much squarely at the other end of the existing spectrum in terms of resolution size. So this would not be your first choice for small, intricate parts. There would need to be some other driver. One of the things that this process offers that others don't, I think, for people to choose meld for small parts. And there are reasons that you might. But for example, you know, we're putting down today in 2019 about 30 pounds of aluminum per hour. So that's you know, just a completely different ballgame than powder bed based process. And further, when we deposit material, when we, let's say, make a part, we're done. So there are a lot of technologies where there are multiple steps. This is a one-step process.
There's no finishing after the part is produced.
When I say one-step process, I mean in creating the part. So there is still subtractive machining to get to a final geometry to get your surfaces finished. So there are no multiple stages of the process. There are no liquids, no binders. There's no oven, there's no sintering, no hipping needed to get to full density. It's just like a wrought part when you're done.
You mentioned earlier on in the example with the ribs that it would enable you to use less material, which I know is one of the features often talked about with additive manufacturing. Does the fact that you're using fewer processes, that MELD is also using fewer processes, mean you have an energy consumption advantage as well? Can you talk a little bit about that, and either relative to other 3D printing processes or relative to traditional manufacturing?
We absolutely have an energy consumption advantage. I would liken the MELD process to the energy use of a traditional CNC process. So compared to powering lasers, for example, or ovens that are needed to sinter for an entire overnight cycle, the energy savings are dramatic. In fact, I tend to package energy savings under overall safety and mobility of the process. For example, these unique aspects of the process are what I feel makes it uniquely suited to be the safest option for remote locations. And by remote locations, I mean things like an Army forward operating base or an oil rig. Not only can you avoid the use of powdered metal, which is an explosive and has some safety risks for personnel, but you avoid lasers, which come along with a heavy energy requirement, and you avoid those gases, the argon or nitrogen that might be needed to fill a chamber with a traditional melt-based process, which is also a safety risk. So this is a low power and thus portable, highly safe mechanism to, again, build, coat, repair, anything. And we've recently been doing some work in partnership with some federal institutions and a university to demonstrate that you could go into a remote location and use either a waste stream or indigenous materials and be up and running, either build or repair parts with what's available to you. And we got our start there by demonstrating that we have a ton of flexibility around what kind of powder we can use in our machine. And if you don't know about powder-based processes, today there are really tight tolerances on what kind of powder, the size of that powder, and the shape of that powder can go in powder bed and laser-based processes. In fact, many equipment manufacturers require that the customers purchase the powder from them just to ensure the quality of the outcome and the specs and performance of their equipment. Just to demonstrate flexibility, we said, okay, let's look at the spectrum of sizes of powders we can put in our machine. And that went from nanoscale to multi-millimeter. Then we said, okay, some of these other processes require that the powders be a perfect circle, a sphere, a spherical shape that requires its own special process to get to, making it expensive. So let's see if we can do that and if we can do other shapes. And we did this rapidly solidified powder that yields a spherical shape. We did ground powder. And then we did flake. And that led us to think, man, I bet you could put machine chips in here. I think you could put scrap metal in a meld machine. And we did. And it worked. And that was the genesis of this development work that's going on now.
Was there a reason that you started with the powder? Or is that just because of the traditional input for 3D printing, or why didn't you start with more solid kinds of metals?
We do both. We did start with the solids, and we have been asked to use powders, just like plate alloys. Companies have developed proprietary powders that offer some benefits, and some of those have come to us because they can't go in a melt-based process. So they're limited to extrusion, for example, and then they're automatically limited to some geometric constraints. So yeah, it's not that we've set out to do one or the other per se. There is a unique attribute of meld that is primarily powder specific at this time. We've done this in a number of ways, but where I think powder-based solutions with the meld technology offers the most opportunity is in mixing materials in situ, in the machine. So on the top of the machine, you can think about multiple hoppers, and we can put different materials in each one. And then as we're depositing, we can change the ratio between them. So let's just give an example with two of them. Let's say we put aluminum in one and silicon carbide in the other. And this particular mixture is of interest to people because it brings the overall strength of aluminum up. So maybe with an aluminum silicon carbide part, you can replace something much closer to steel and enjoy some the benefits of light weighting. So if we can build an aluminum silicon carbide part with the meld machine, you know, then great, that's fantastic. But now let's say you would like a part that requires different mixtures or volume fractions along an axis of the part. So let's say brake rotor, that's a good example. So you have a portion of your brake rotor that's going to experience contact with the brake pad. In this place on the part, you care most about wear resistance. So the maximum amount of silicon carbide I can offer you at that position gives you the maximum wear resistance and thus the maximum life. But maybe inside your inner diameter of the part, you care more about ductility. You have no need for greater strength or wear resistance. Then I can bring it all the way down to zero or pure aluminum. So we call this functional grading. If you think about tailoring the materials that you build the part with as you build it to be responsive to needs at specific points, whether those are mechanical like wear resistance or thermal or electrical. This is where I think there's huge, huge opportunity going all the way back to the design of product. You know, I think in our future, our mechanical design engineers will be as educated in materials, and they will come together as one body of knowledge and expertise, because we will be able to build with material combinations never before possible. And that's what we're doing today.
That's a very good point. It's something that Michael and I have discussed also in one of our previous episodes, which is really the power of the coming together of new technologies like MELD with new design processes and new materials that compounds the overall impact. It's something I was curious to ask you, Nancy. So we've gone through a number of the advantages of the technology: flexibility to work with more materials, lower energy consumption, more safety, and as you started off, the ability to work in a less controlled environment, meaning you can operate in a normal factory floor as opposed to being limited to what is in the chamber of the 3D printer, which makes me think this technology could become very pervasive in industry and manufacturing. Fingers crossed, indeed. How easy or difficult is it for companies to bring the technology on the factory floor? Is there much work needed to restructure the manufacturing process? Do they need different skills in the workforce? How does it work?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. Every established industry needs to do due diligence to introduce any new anything, material, process, inspection method, you know, automation. So absolutely, there's some engineering work to do to think about the optimization, not only of placement of equipment and training of people, but sequence of events. There's an optimal path to be found for, you know, do you add features on the front end or the back end of an existing process? Where do you insert a new technology to gain the most benefits with the least disruption to your already, you know, well-running, full of very fixed assets facility? And that's something that the most forward-leaning companies think about immediately and already have ideas about when they come to us. In terms of training, I think that the MELD process is the easiest additive process to employ existing staff to operate. And that does come back to the fact that it's very much a CNC style equipment. It looks like equipment that folks who are in machine shops today are used to seeing. It runs off G code. So the language is very familiar, and there's quite a bit of intuition already about feeds and speeds and how it works, because it does look so much like a subtractive process. And we have brought people into our facility, and they are building parts within hours. So again, it just goes back to its simplicity, in my opinion. I mean, looking at other additive manufacturing processes and equipment, I see a million buttons. You know, looks like you have to have an IT degree, computer science degree to just operate the machine. And these people are in, you know, full hazmat suits. And it's quite intimidating. I really enjoy that the MELD process is something that's so much more approachable and clearly, visibly more simple to use.
You said it would have minimal impacts on the skills needed because it's similar to traditional manufacturing. What about the number of workers, number of laborers?
I knew this was coming. I knew it.
Marco, I'm becoming predictable. We're not even that old a podcast. So I've got something else that maybe you won't necessarily anticipate, but go ahead. Ask this one. Answer this one first.
Well, I'm pretty sure since I have listened to you guys discuss other technologies that I would like to say, yeah, everyone's job is safe.
Except Marcos.
Yeah, any additive process does offer an opportunity for automation, no question. And it offers an opportunity to replace a multi-step process that involves getting in huge billets of metal and machining them down. So some folks would transfer, I think, from subtractive roles to additive roles.
They'd be subtracted.
No. I'm not going on the record as saying that.
All right. So have you seen other examples? You mentioned the aluminum and the silicon carbide. Have you seen other examples where there are novel materials that you're beginning to blend or use or manufacture and meld?
Yeah, the cool thing about it is, I mean, you can mix anything in there. So we've created materials with carbon nanotubes and boron nanotubes and you've chopped carbon fibers. So the opportunity to create new composite materials is probably a huge area for research and innovation. I mean, I don't know how they do, but you know, you could put walnut shells in there if you wanted to.
Maybe you should try.
Nancy. Yeah, I actually wanted to switch gears and ask you a bit about the business model of MEL. So what is the business model? Is it to sell the machines, to sell time on the machines, to move towards offering advisory consulting services on how companies can use the machines? How does it work?
That is a fantastic question. We had a lot of choices, you know, to consider and choose between. I told you that MELD offers a lot of opportunities, and so it might be that folks are interested in a unique metal matrix composite building ability, or the ability to coat two dissimilar materials that they can't otherwise, or repair what is otherwise an unrepairable part, or build components. So there's a number of reasons you might come to MELD technology, but I think the most common one does center around the ability to make or manipulate larger parts. And so in our initial work with customers interested in larger parts, I quickly realized we can't ask people to ship gigantic 6,000 pound components around the world or across the country to us for us to process. If this is the opportunity, they will need their own equipment in their own facility. And that is what drove us to come to market with off-the-shelf equipment at a small scale for initial exploration and the opportunity to build custom large-scale equipment. That said, MELD is a brand new technology, and our customers do want to explore it in their due diligence phase. So for them, we do manufacturing or R&D or exploration, and certainly offer our expertise on what we feel would be a good use of the technology and what we feel might not be the best use of the technology. And we try very hard to be as honest as possible because we're new and it's new. And the last thing we need is someone to have anything other than a highly successful experience with it.
Are there different industries that you expect to be closer to your, you know, your core customers than others? I mean, you mentioned aerospace earlier. I don't know if that was a real example or not, but are there, you know, could you see this being used in construction, or could you see this being used in car manufacturing? You know, where do you think your sweet spot is?
Yeah, that's what's exciting. Today we are engaged with companies in almost every industry. There's so much opportunity. And it's still the tip of the iceberg in terms of discovering all the potential applications. And we recently had a company here who said, they explained that they have very large parts, quite large, quite heavy parts that they currently get as forging, long lead time. So they generally keep one in inventory for maybe up to a year in advance to make sure that they have it as needed. What the forging goes through is a very precise subtractive machining process to get to its final geometry. One mistake in that final machining and the entire part must be scrapped. So now not only are they inventorying one part for, let's say, up to a year to make sure they have it on time, they're inventorying two to make sure they have a backup part in case that first one has, you know, maybe a cubic millimeter of material loss. That's it. It's over for that part. So I said, absolutely, you know, you can put that material back on with the melt process. You will have structural integrity. It'll, you know, no problem. And then you'll be able to carry on. What's the value of that? Yeah, that's a $600,000 part. So that's wow. Just one example from one company where real value is being created. We've been approached by a civil engineering research group who said, wow, we have steel bridge structures all over this country failing that are difficult to get to and very difficult to repair. How do you repair a structure that you cannot remove from its location? Well, can you take a machine to it? You know, that technology already exists. The platforms already exist. This melt technology can process those materials, can process them in open air. It is portable. So I think I'm not even aware of all the things we'll be doing and helping with. And that's really exciting.
I love that bridge repair idea. That's, you know, sounds like an infrastructure bill is something you should be rooting for.
I found it very interesting as well, because it's the first time that I hear repairs as opposed to outright production being emphasized as the main area of application of additive manufacturing. So it's an extremely interesting application.
Can you talk a little bit about the corporate heritage of MELD? You're not a typical startup.
We're not?
Well, you weren't from scratch, right? Am I misunderstanding? I thought you guys are an outgrowth of another company.
Ah, okay. I see. Yes. We launched MELD in 2018. So we're very new in that way. But this is a technology we've been working on for over a decade. And that work has been, until 2018, done in our parent company, Aeroprobe Corporation. Is that what you mean?
That's what I mean.
Okay, yes. Yeah. But we're all one big startup, really. Okay. I don't know when you graduate out of startup, but
Nancy, to compensate for the fact that Michael questioned your startup credentials.
That's not what I was doing. It sounded like there was an interesting thing, you know, how come it's not part of Aeroprobe? You know, I thought there was more there. But
you're not really a startup. Are you? What are you doing for a podcast? To compensate for that, you want to talk for a moment, boast for a moment about your market disruptor title?
Oh, yes. Wow. I was so excited about that. I went to the R&D 100s award ceremony hoping to be in the R&D 100 because we were notified that we were a nominee, but you have to go to find out if you actually won or not. And so 100 is a long list when you're waiting for your name to be called. And I spent most of the evening just thinking, please, you know, please please let us have been included in the top 100, you know, technologies, innovative technologies around the world. I would be so excited about that. And our name was called. So I went up and accepted the R&D 100 award and then tried to be politely attentive to the people behind me receiving awards, but really was, you know, texting all the team here and taking pictures of the award and sending it out and, you know, texting my daughter. And so and then they said, you know, all right, it's time to announce these special awards. And so most disruptive technology globally out of everyone, meld manufacturing. And after that, I have no idea what was said or what happened at the whole event. I was on top of the world. I couldn't That's get awesome. Over it.
That's awesome.
That is pretty cool.
You were thinking first they were calling you the most disruptive awardee because you were standing behind them.
Some of my friends had made the joke that disruptive is very apropos.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I'm a rule follower, though, for the record.
Engineers usually are, I think, right? Let's let you wax philosophic a little bit and look ahead 20 years. And what does MELD look like? What does manufacturing generally look like? You know, how much of the manufacturing world is additive in its, you know, various incarnations, MELD and otherwise, and how much of it is traditional, subtractive, or maybe something new? You know, what does it look like in 20 years?
20 years is a long time. I've watched technologies, you know, be born and struggle for life and see adoption and become widespread, you know, already so many in my lifetime. So our cycle time, you know, as a society to implement something fantastic is shorter, and I think shortening all the time. So 20 years from now, additive is in every manufacturing facility of every kind. Prototyping is a seamless part of manufacturing. There are new college degrees, as I said, that incorporate material science and mechanical engineering and you know, designers will have both and be experts. So I think we'll have new college degrees. There'll be a mountain of literature and publications and experts on the MELD process. Right now, that's a wide open area of research for universities. That many applications, that many materials, that many material combinations. There's a ton of stuff to study. And I think we'll, you know, more broadly, we'll see an integration of multiple additive technologies in products. Today, because all these technologies are still young, they're still being developed somewhat in silos, but it will not be very long before the focus is on the integration of multiple additive technologies. So we won't talk about metal versus polymers versus electronics. As I discuss the multi-material parts, I very much can see within that time frame there being, you know, multi-material, meaning something much broader than different types of metals and reinforcement materials.
That's an exciting vision. I was interested in your focus on all of the education that needs to accompany this growing industry.
Within the 20 years, will we be able to print the spacecraft?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right.
Melded components will be in space and well before that time.
Just ask Elon. Anything else you'd like to talk about that you think we haven't covered? Any sort of parting thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, what I would offer is that these topics may seem highly technical, and I can imagine sometimes when I'm experiencing a new technology or a new area of science, I can feel intimidated. So I can imagine that additive manufacturing and additive in metal can be something that maybe people don't run to understand. But there is so much opportunity, and it is really accessible, and it's really fun. You know, the thing about additive is whatever additive process, whatever material is, it's super fun, and it's something that will be in all of our hands eventually. You know, we have a cell phone today. We'll all have our own 3D printer of things in the future. So yeah, please come. Learn about it, explore, and engage in the conversation. And I think as parents, the best thing we can do is encourage our children to be multidisciplinary in their activities and in their studies. Our world is changing. The rate of innovation, I think, will increase. And this means that we'll all be researchers in one way or another. So we need to understand and appreciate others and their expertise. And we really need to be able to communicate and work as teams together to get where we're going as a society.
Beautiful last sentiment. I love it. Thank you for sharing that. That's great.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well,
this was fantastic.
Wait, don't turn us off yet. Before you do, please, if you enjoyed this episode, if you like what we're doing here at M4Edge, forward this episode to a friend or to a colleague who you think would enjoy it or would enjoy the show in general. Post it on social media, share, help us build the community. Thanks for being curious. Okay, now you can turn it off.